I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest, Seth Deborah Baroth, combines over 40 years of experience in the medical field with years of hypnosis expertise in what makes Seth Deborah stand out among the crowd. Years of being a registered nurse, then furthering her training to become a nurse anesthetist, and then becoming a certified instructor of hypnosis allowed a very deep breadth of understanding of the mind-body connection. She teaches a course for medical hypnosis where she not only teaches about the very real physiology of this connection in a way that ordinary people can understand, but also how we can use our minds to connect within. Seth Deborah is a fellow with the National Board of Certified Clinical Hypnotherapists and has presented at the National Guild of Hypnosis, the International Medical and Dental Hypnosis Association, the International Hypnosis Federation, the American Board of Hypnotherapy, the Institute for the Advanced Studies of Health World Conference, the Dermatology Nurse Association, and the 14th Annual University of California, San Francisco Integrated Health Medical Forum, as well as to a UCSF elective class for students within the medical department. She recently returns from presenting at the Association for Professional Hypnosis and Psychotherapy in London. She lectures in the hospital setting regarding medical hypnosis, including St. Rose Hospital in Hayward, California, Seton Hospital in Daly City, California, the Bay Area Cancer Forum at Summit Sutter Health Hospital in Oakland, and at Kaiser Hospital offices in Alameda, California. In 2007, Seth Deborah appeared on the Discovery Channel's Mythbusters Season 5, Episode 7, segment on hypnosis. Seth Deborah was inducted into the Order of Braid with the National Guild of Hypnosis in 2011. The Order of Braid Council is a centerpiece of the NGH award system and recognizes a lifetime of outstanding achievement, dedication, and service. She was also included in the 2012 Top 100 Nurse Practitioners Roundup. In 2013, she received one of the highest awards within the National Guild of Hypnosis, the Charles Tarrant Award, Spreading the Light of Hypnosis. The mind and body cannot be separated. It is a bidirectional system, and Seth Deborah knows how to help you to help yourself connect and thrive. More information is available at www.hypnotherapyforhealth.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Seth Deborah, and I look forward to hearing how you use hypnosis with medical issues. Now first, what is hypnosis and how does it work?
Well, nobody really knows what hypnosis is per se. They do know that we go in and out of hypnosis all on our own. You know, you're driving your car and your thoughts are somewhere else and you miss your exit. They call that road hypnosis. Mm-hmm. But one thing they do know about hypnosis is that normally we are in beta brainwave, and as we start to go to sleep at night, we go into alpha brainwave. And that alpha brainwave is the same brainwave as the beginning of hypnosis. Mm-hmm. So actually, when I was on the Mythbusters and they had leads going into some of the people I was working with, they could actually see when they were entering or not entering into a state of hypnosis. Mm-hmm. So they have done studies at Stanford where they've had people not in hypnosis see the color red, put them in the real-time PET scan machine, and they can see what area the brain lights up. Mm-hmm. Then they take them out, put them into hypnosis, seeing red, hearing red, feeling red, whatever makes that red real for them, back in that PET scan machine, and the same area of the brain is lighting up whether you are in hypnosis or not. So in some manner of speaking, your brain doesn't know the difference between reality and not reality. Your conscious mind knows, but not your brain. The other thing that they know now happens is the frontal lobe of your brain, where your thought processes are, it's kind of quiets down. And another influence that happens in hypnosis is that the two halves of your brain, your left brain, your right brain, are connected by something called the corpus callosum. In hypnosis, that corpus callosum is supersaturated, so that the electrical conductivity between the two halves of the brain is different when you're in hypnosis than when you're not in hypnosis. And how this presents itself is in two ways. Number one, there is a little bit of time distortion, so that an hour, for instance, will seem like only 5 minutes when you're in hypnosis. The other thing is that your brain literally is more open to suggestion when you're in hypnosis if you want that suggestion. So if I were to say to somebody just in regular talking, you know, every time you see the color red, you're just going to smile and have it feel good about yourself, it does nothing. But if they're in hypnosis and I say every time you see the color red, whether it's a red traffic light, red flowers, you're just going to stop and smile and feel good about yourself, and they want that suggestion, they do accept it. Another interesting thing now, when I was in school long, long ago, they used to think that once you were an adult, that was it, your brain was formed. They now know that's not the case, that we have billions of neurons that we haven't used yet, even when we're older. And so that when we feel something, when we emote something, when we practice something, when we rehearse it, we are actually forming a new neural pathway that wasn't there before. So it like sparks another branch and another branch and another branch. And with repetition, that myelin sheath starts to get thicker and thicker. And that myelin sheath kind of allows for the conductivity of that nerve fiber, that nerve pathway. The old pathways that you're not using anymore, that myelin sheath kind of thins down or atrophies, for lack of a better metaphor, so that the new pathway becomes more ingrained, so to speak, and it becomes your reaction now. So I used to smoke like 40 years ago. That pathway is still there. It's just kind of atrophied. So that even in the times of most severe stress, I don't even think of reaching for a cigarette now because it's so... So when we're talking about how hypnosis works, repetition becomes important, and also that little spark, you know, that emotion that's involved is also a very important part of success in hypnosis.
It's interesting how the body all works together with the mind and everything else. And can you tell us then a little bit about the mind-body connection?
Sure. Now, everybody understands the mind-body connection in its simplest form. For instance, you're going to speak in front of a class and your hands get sweaty or you feel like you're going to throw up, right? That is the mind-body connection at work. So people, they get that, they understand that, but sometimes they have a difficulty in understanding, well, if I hold this internalized anger form inside me for 25 years, how is that going to affect my body? Why do I possibly have rheumatoid arthritis show up or irritable bowel syndrome or other medical issues? Okay, and that mind-body connection is very, very real. And if you understand that when you're forming as an embryo, there's a part of your body, a part of that embryo called the neural crest, which is where your nervous system is forming. But it is also from where your hypothalamus is forming. And I'll explain how this influences us in a moment. We have something called that hypothalamus. And it is basically one of the parts, but a big part of its function, is to interpret your external events in your outside world. What makes me respond to something differently than you would respond an external event that appears to be the same way, yet our emotional feelings are different.
Mm-hmm.
So that hypothalamus, based on how it's interpreting your world, sends out biochemicals, neurotransmitters, to your pituitary gland. Your pituitary gland is your master endocrine organ, and it will send out signals to your thyroid, your sexual organs, all your different endocrine glands. Then, at the same time, that pituitary gland will send out signals to your adrenal glands that sit on top of your kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
Your adrenal glands put out cortisol, adrenaline, epinephrine, okay, your fight or flight response. And this is called the HPA axis, the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal. Your body is 70% water, okay? So we are sending out these biochemicals. This is how our body, how our cells talk to each other. They send out one chemical, it talks to the cell, it sends out another chemical and another chemical. As a matter of fact, you might want to, on YouTube, Google on YouTube, however you go to YouTube, and put in, they have wonderful animations from Harvard as to how the cells will actually talk to each other with chemicals and then walk along the epithelium of the blood vessels. It's absolutely fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's almost like we have someone else inside of us, except it is us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And our thoughts are the language that talks to the chemicals. So anyway, okay, so you have this HPA axis, and then getting back to that nervous system. So that hypothalamus is also where the nervous system originates from. Came out of the same stuff when you were an embryo. So besides that HPA axis, you also have your nerves, your sympathetic nervous system and your parasympathetic nervous system originating in that hypothalamus. The sympathetic nervous system is your fight or flight. How I would remember it in nursing school was, it sounds like sympathy, but it's just the opposite. And its purpose is to have you run away from the woolly mammoth. Then you have your parasympathetic nervous system, and that is your rest and relax system. And they are in direct opposition to each other, so that if the sympathetic system will open your pupils to allow more light in so that you could respond to emergencies, your parasympathetic system will close your pupils so that you can get some sleep, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there it's going to every, you know, your it's going to your spinal column. And so these signals are being sent to every cell in your body. There's also another nervous system that most people don't talk about called the enteric nervous system. And that is a direct communication between the brain and the gut, and the gut and the brain. As a matter of fact, your serotonin, 90 to 95% of it is made in your GI system, in your gut system.
Mm-hmm.
So you have your thoughts. When you understand this, that we are 70% water, that our body talks in chemical language, and that our thoughts influence that chemical language, then that mind-body connection becomes very, very real and understandable. Now, you could get into the micro of how this happens, you know, but it's not rocket science.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It can be if you go dwell that far deeply into it. But, you know, if you can understand, you get nervous and you feel like, you get butterflies in your stomach and that kind of stuff. So just imagine if that kind of mechanism is going on and on and on over years, that it's going to have some effect on the body.
Mm-hmm.
They also now know that your DNA can change,
right,
which
right.
they didn't know years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you know, it's very, very real. And I could tell you as a medical person, I've made a 180-degree turnaround as far as how much that mind-body connection is and how real it is.
Mm-hmm. I just read some research that even smoking causes the DNA to change, which I thought was very interesting, that, you know, we can influence, because it used to be that the DNA was set at birth, it never changed, but That's not so anymore.
Yeah, and now they know. So you have twins, and supposedly they're, you know, exact replicas of each other, except they have different fingerprints, so that's fascinating to me. You know, but one gets cancer and one doesn't. So how does that happen? Well, it can happen from, you know, pesticides and who knows what other environmental things. And it can also happen from emotional responses, too, because they are sending out chemicals, the same as pesticides send out chemicals. And, you know, our bodies respond to them.
Then, Seth Deborah, how does the subconscious mind enter into the mind-body connection?
Okay, so think of your conscious mind is a very, as your aware mind, and it is a very judgmental, critical mind, and its purpose is to, you know, look or judge everything that's happening. You know, we are animals and we have to stay alive. And so we could be talking now, and yet our conscious mind could be evaluating things all the time, like, okay, what am I going to do after this radio interview? And am I, you know, always, I call it like monkey mind. It's chatter all the time. Then you have your unconscious mind, your unaware mind. There is part of that unconscious mind that runs your body. Its prime directive is to keep you alive and well. It runs your heart, your lungs, your hormones, your kidneys. You don't have to think about it. Prime directive, keep you alive and well. There's another part of that unconscious mind that psychologists, psychiatrists call your subconscious mind. It has more to do with your emotional mind. What makes you react to something differently than I would react what appears to be the same thing? Its prime directive is also to keep you alive and well. The problem is that it's doing it with a child's mind. So if you think of a 4 to a 7-year-old child, in that it takes information in literally and irrationally, like a sponge, it just soaks in information. So for instance, you might spill your milk and your mom, your dad yell at you, you're so clumsy, you're going to be bad at sports, you can't follow instructions. And that child just soaks in that information. It's not thinking rationally. It's not going, well, mom's just in a bad mood. Dad's had a rough day. You know, kids spill their milk all the time. It doesn't do that. So it soaks in that information as if it's real, and it responds, but it's not aware of it. Mm-hmm. Or an event can happen, and you can almost like take a picture of that event and hold it within, but you're not aware of it. So you can have an event, you know, if you think of like a string of pearls and at that bottom pearl, and then you add another pearl, another pearl, another pearl. So you're up at the top responding to the bottom, but you're not aware of it. So you could be a 40, 50, 60, 70 years old responding to something from your subconscious mind from a very young age, but you're not aware of it. And the wonderful thing about hypnosis is we can get to those issues and with various hypnotic tools release them.
Mm-hmm.
Another aspect of that subconscious mind in its childlike quality is it's egocentric, that is, the world revolves around me. I'm the center of the universe. So, for instance, I had a client who was coming to me actually for nervousness about an upcoming surgery, and it was on blood pressure pills, as we found out in the first visit, like most of his life, a long, long time. In hypnosis, it turned out it was an incident from when he was 6 years old, and he was in the back of the car, and his parents, they were on their way to vacation. His parents pulled over to the side of the road and told him that they were getting a divorce.
Oh.
And he felt that there was something wrong with him that never got addressed. Once we got to that incident and healed it, his blood pressure actually stabilized, and his surgery went really well. But more importantly, he was able to really start to get off of those blood pressure pills because his body was not responding to those toxic thoughts that he was thinking about himself all the time. So another way to think of it is like a captain of a ship and the crew of the ship. The captain is the conscious mind. The crew of the ship is the subconscious mind. People just assume that the captain's in charge, but the crew of the ship is the one that has the oars in the water, right? And so in hypnosis, we are actually able to reach the subconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I will have a lot of psychologists, they'll send me clients, you know, they work with them over years, you're letting them know this is a problem, this is dysfunctional, da-da-da-da-da. But then, when they might be having a problem changing their behaviors, you know, so the conscious lets you know I got a problem, but to speak to that subconscious very often is going to a hypnotherapist to reach that subconscious and educate it, reframe, and all the other parts therapy, all the other wonderful tools that we have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What kind of medical issues can you use hypnosis or hypnotherapy with?
Every single medical issue, probably. I was actually just reading an article that they're going to present a study at the ASCH meeting, the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis in San Diego, using self-hypnosis, teaching pediatric children self-hypnosis who have sickle cell disease. One of the main areas that's really recognized with hypnosis is pain management.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we're dealing with acute pain, such as an accident, or with chronic pain. And actually, regarding chronic pain, they're finding out that the sooner you can use these relaxation techniques, and hopefully with hypnosis, or they also use CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, which is basically, you know, stress reduction and imagery, which is basically hypnosis. But anyways, that's another discussion.
Mm-hmm.
That the loop that builds with chronic pain gets lower, so that the chronic pain does not get as bad as it could get.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, like I said, acute pain, chronic pain, irritable bowel syndrome has been studied with thousands of people, especially in England and also at Chapel Hill. And what I have noticed in my work with IBS clients is that the people who hold in their emotions actually develop that constipation, the irritable bowel.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who kind of deny that there are any issues at all in their life, they kind of seem to have diarrhea IBS. So that's just what I have noticed, whether it's remarkable, you know, with thousands of people, I have no idea. But that is what I have noticed with. Another area to use hypnosis is with preoperative anxiety. When I was working as a nurse anesthetist, I could certainly tell you that if a person was anxious going into surgery, their blood pressure and pulse, you'd be fighting it the whole case long.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas once, when someone was really calm and relaxed, that's how they were during the surgery as far as their vital signs were, unless, you know, something's going on in the operating field itself.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely, you know, working with someone preoperatively to have more confidence in the surgeons and in the hospital to visualize healing, a quick healing. Also, you know, if you're going to be in physical therapy, that kind of stuff. Visualizing what you want. During surgery, I recommend having a MP3 with a little bit of hypnosis going on because, you know, sometimes people do remember things during surgery, even though they've had general anesthesia. To my way of thinking, it can't hurt as long as you make sure that the volume has a preset, you know, place so it can't accidentally go up and hurt the ears. You could tape in those little earbuds nowadays so it doesn't interfere with the anesthesia tubing and such.
Mm-hmm.
And also postoperatively, you know, to help the person manage pain, be able to ask for help, tune out all the different sounds in the recovery room, everyone else's, you know, heart rate monitors and ventilators. And if you have a ventilator, it's a nice way to stop fighting the ventilator.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the other medical conditions are rheumatoid arthritis with pain, letting go of anger. Gosh, eczema. I had a gal who had eczema ever since she was a baby. In hypnosis, this was one of my first regression clients, and she went back to being in the delivery room. I had her feel the feeling right before she starts to itch. And she goes back to being in the delivery room and remembered that no one was taking care of her. And so she started to, you know, have this reaction on her skin. The interesting thing is, so we dealt with that feeling that no one was taking care of her and so forth. And I taught her other ways to deal with those feelings.
Mm-hmm.
But when she went home and asked her mom, she came back and told me absolutely that her mom had had a medical emergency. I think it was bleeding or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And all the doctors and the nurses in the delivery room were paying attention to the mom.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, what other ways? I mean, there's just so many ways. Working with people even to stop smoking, to lose weight, like whether it's cardiovascular patients who come to you or diabetic patients, needle phobias. Oh, another one is trichotillomania, where there's hair pulling
mm-hmm.
the hair or the
mm-hmm.
eyebrows or skin picking. And very often you will find if you regress to the feeling, you will get to an event where this emotion came from. And when you release that emotion, the behavior goes away. You know,
mm-hmm.
you may need to repeat it a few times. And that's the thing that you need to understand with hypnosis, that it may need repetition. Some people get instantaneous change, and some people need repetition.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to
mm-hmm.
use.
Great. Now, would you then tell us about your services and how the listeners can reach you?
Sure. My website is www.hypnotherapyfor.com, and I work with people in person. I'm in Castro Valley in the East Bay of San Francisco, and I also work with a lot of people via Skype
mm-hmm.
Of my medical background and, I guess, kind of my reputation for medical hypnosis.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a lot of people contact me and want to work with me via Skype. And it works really, really nicely.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pleasantly surprised how nicely Skype works. You know, I like that one-on-one in person, but, you know, like I'm working with someone from Hong Kong, actually, or someone from L.A., or another fellow from
mm-hmm.
Florida. And it goes all around. You know, they will have worked with other people, and then they'll say, well, let's give this a try. And it works, and
mm-hmm.
it really makes me feel good. I mean, there is
right.
nothing as heartwarming for me as changing a life. And when someone is struggling with medical issues,
mm-hmm.
You know, getting that turnaround. Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention the cancer.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that it's a cure for cancer. It's that it is supportive. Whether you're helping a person deal with the diagnosis, get ready for surgery, dealing with the post-operative emotions, you know, the physical changes in your body,
mm-hmm.
the emotional changes, the anger, that kind of stuff. Also with chemotherapy and radiation, you know, having that time distortion is a really godsend if you're there for a couple of hours. Even if it's short chemo and you're listening to a hypnosis MP3 or you're doing self-hypnosis so that you're not taking on that negative talk that goes on in those chemo rooms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this one died and your hair's going to fall out and all that kind of stuff, you know,
mm-hmm.
so that becomes important.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, letting go of different traumas. When I first came out of nursing, I worked in oncology. And what I did notice is that, now this is back in 1969, you know, people were coming back and forth and they didn't do well. And what I noticed is that 2 to 3 years before their diagnosis, they all seemed to have had really traumatic events that they were still holding on to. And so I believe in letting go of those traumatic events, you know, learning what you needed to learn. Again, using hypnosis even to talk to people who have passed on, whether you're really talking to the dead or not doesn't matter. Are you getting the emotional release that you need to get and
mm-hmm.
the comfort and the forgiveness of self and others?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so cancer support is very, very important. And again, I believe in individualizing that, because I was once going to a cancer meeting, and one lady stood up and she said, "That Pac-Man just doesn't work for me. I'm a gentler soul." And to her, it was the idea of a bubble, like when you were a kid and you glue bubbles, and it would be a rainbow bubble going up to God and giving it to God. You know, so when I also teach medical hypnosis. I have a course, and you can find out about that on my website. But anyway, when I teach my students, I tell them, you know, it really needs to be individualized. Don't get stuck in that writing, you know, reading a script. Scripts are good, you know, to stimulate your mind. What else should I add here and there? But go to what works for that person. You know, it has to be what works for that person.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Well, I thank you very much, Seth Deborah, and this has been interesting and will be helpful to those that have the different medical conditions that hypnosis will help. And I look forward to talking with you again.
Me too. Thank you for having me.
My second guest, Dr. Curtis Kuhn, is motivational, comical, and inspirational, sharing his personal experience on overcoming lung cancer, diabetes, polycythemia, Lyme's disease, and related metabolic disorders using metabolic nutritional therapy. After being partially diagnosed and misdiagnosed over a 10-year period, as well as after three universities preparing for medical school, he finally discovered metabolic therapies in 1985. Over the next 4 years, he overcame his medical problems and actually gained 50 pounds of bone and muscle, an inch in height, and dedicated his life to this science. But this was just the beginning of his journey. He moved to Las Vegas, became a private investigator, and pursued the lifetime ambition as a professional singer. He has written three books, the first, Metabolic Metamorphosis, which tells of his experience during the first 4 years of metabolic therapy. Metabolic Mission, his second book, which shares his journey to Las Vegas, the highlights of his singing career, and the only Vince Gill impersonator in Las Vegas, and the tough times he experienced in that wonderful but incredibly decadent city. His third book is also Metabolic Mission in its second edition, which details the last decade of his life. The book has also been translated into a screenplay for a major motion picture written by a member of the Screenwriters Guild of Hollywood, California. In 1991, the governor of Kansas gave Curtis the I Believe I Can Achieve Award for overcoming liver cancer. In gratitude, he wrote, arranged, and performed the gospel song, Join Hands, for her anti-drug campaign. The Paradise Baptist Choir that also sang on this record is Barry Sanders' Mother and Sister from Wichita, Kansas. Barry played for the Detroit Lions and was the Heisman Trophy winner in 1988. The music video for this performance is posted on his website. Curtis began touring on the national talk show circuit in 1989, had his own radio show, The Metabolic Forum, in Las Vegas in 2009, and plans starting another international talk show tour. He consults with clients across America and globally. More information is available at themetabolicinstitute.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Kuhn, and I look forward to hearing about metabolic therapy. Now first, what is metabolic therapy?
Well, it's metabolic's kind of short for metabolism. It's pretty basic, but it's a system designed by Dr. Kelly 50 years ago to address the entire body utilizing the autonomic nervous system. So he designed a test based on that, and it used to be a tremendous test. It was 3,200 questions. It was overwhelming, actually. When I started the program in 1985, it took me, oh my gosh, about 20 hours to fill out the questionnaire. you know, so many questions. Over the last 20 years, he narrowed it down to about 400 questions. So it still takes about 3 or 4 hours to fill it out, but it's very, very accurate. It, once you're finished, you can score it yourself from page to page. It tells you what mode of the autonomic nervous system you're functioning in and your subtype, which is what we address. So there's three divisions to the autonomic nervous system, the sympathetic, the balanced, and the parasympathetic. And the sympathetic dominants tend to genetically be vegetarians from birth. And so they have very linear builds, very left brain dominant, analytical, logical. Where on the other end of that continuum is the parasympathetic, which is genetically carnivorous. And you're familiar, I'm sure, with the old Pritikin diet back in the 70s for the sympathetic dominants, the vegetarians. And then over the last 25 years, Dr. Atkins has been real popular. Well, he addresses the parasympathetic, the meat eaters, high protein, high fat, very low carbohydrate. And those neither one's right or wrong. It's just specific for your metabolic type. So Dr. Kelly, in the early 60s, when he was diagnosed with pancreatic and liver cancer, he had been doing a lot of work with this patient. He was an orthodontist by nature. And he was working with a lot of children, and he noticed when he changed their diet and got given supplements, their teeth got better. So when he was diagnosed, he started utilizing pancreatic enzymes to break down the tumors and, of course, the nutritional aspect. And that's when he came up with the metabolic typing aspect also and started to apply that. So everything just evolved over the next, since from then till now. And his work was always ongoing, always changing, you know, adapting to the times. So it was quite amazing. When I started his therapy in 85, I'd been in and out of hospitals and clinics for 11 years. I was in the Marine Corps in Vietnam. And when I got out of the Marine Corps, I had some health problems. I had made one fatal mistake almost when I was in the Marine Corps. I joined to get on the Marine Corps boxing team. I got stationed in Maine, and they didn't have boxing. So I got involved in bodybuilding instead. I was kind of a small guy, 150 pounds, 5'9". And I started doing a protein supplement. It was a milk-based protein. And at the time, I didn't know it, but I had a milk intolerance from birth. And so all this protein I started taking, it messed up my gallbladder, my liver, my digestive system. I just started getting really sick and having a lot of problems. And over the next 11 years, I just deteriorated. And in 1976, they thought I had pheochromocytoma, which is cancer of the adrenal glands. It wasn't quite pathological, so they didn't treat it. And then I saw a neurologist. He said, "Well, you have polycythemia." And I said, "Well, what's that?" He said, "Well, you have too many red blood cells. You're going to have to start giving whole blood every 3 months just to control your high blood pressure." I was passing out all the time. And back then, they didn't know what caused polycythemia. Now we know it's a lack of oxygen at the cell level. And when that happens, the bone marrow produces more red blood cells, so you have a vicious cycle. So you have too many red blood cells, so I had to give whole blood. It was kind of funny. I was just telling a friend yesterday, the first time I gave blood back in 1976, you know, the Red Cross, when I finished, I jumped off the table and I said, "Man, I'm ready to go about 5 rounds." And that nurse said, "What? You have more energy after giving blood?" And I said, "Yeah, for some reason." But I said, my neurologist told me that I've got too many red blood cells, so I got to give blood every 3 months. So I started to do that. And for the next 10 years, I had to do that. And sometimes I wouldn't make it in, and I wouldn't get in for maybe 6 or 9 months. So my blood just got real thick, and I got real slow and very alkaline. It was tough times. And then, so yeah, I was 76, 77, 79, I was diagnosed with diabetes. So it was adult onset, so I had to address that. And, you know, I was still an athlete. I ran cross country in college and was still a bodybuilder, but I was always 5'9", 150 pounds. Could never put on any size at all. Of course, my diabetes got worse and worse, and polycythemia. And thank goodness I didn't treat the pheochromocytoma. The doctor told me, I said, "Well, what can we do for that?" He said, "I really don't know. It's on the cusp of being pathological. If we treated it with chemotherapy, you probably wouldn't make it." I'm like, "Well, that's not good." So that was a lot of confusing tests way back then. So I just kept looking for answers. And when I was an undergraduate school, I went from a broadcasting music and drama major into psychology and pre-med, you know. And still couldn't find the answers. And I graduated midterm 81 at Marymount College in Salina, Kansas. And right before I graduated, about a month before midterm there, we got to the chapter on metabolism in our anatomy and physiology class, and that's when we skipped over it. And I asked Dr. Ziegler after class, I said, "Doc, you tell me we're not going to study metabolism in medical school?" And he laughed. He said, "Curtis, we're decades away from that." I said, "Why would I go to medical school? I want to learn how to rebuild my body. I've got all these health problems." He said, "Honestly, you need to keep looking." So I did. I didn't go to medical school. I'd already been to three universities. So I kept looking. I was in the health food stores every week, in the library. I knew there were answers. And ironically, I was living in Winfield, Kansas in 1984. I'd got married. And that's where Dr. Kelly's from, Winfield, Kansas, in Ark City. And right before Christmas, 84, I was in the health food store in Ark City. And I was reading his second book, Metabolic Ecology. And the lady that owned the health food store, she looked at me and she said, "You need to buy that book." I said, "Why?" She said, "Well, number one, that man's a genius, Dr. Kelly. I went to grade school with him." I said, "You're kidding me." She goes, "No, I grew up in Winfield. And, you know, he has several cancer clients from all over the world that he's treated, and they're still alive." I said, "Yeah, I'm reading that." She goes, "You need to read the book." I said, "Okay, fine." So I read the book. My wife was a nurse. She worked in oncology at Wesley Hospital 3 years. And she encouraged me, "Let's do this program. You need to do this." So that's when it all began, Carl, and mm-hmm. I'm still here today, 29 years later. So it's been a journey.
How does the metabolic therapy compare to other holistic therapies?
Well, first of all, you know, it's been around since the early 60s. So Dr. Kelly was the founder of the science based on the autonomic nervous system. There are so many choices out there now. It's overwhelming, really. I have a lot of clients who call me every week, and they've already looked at so many different alternatives. And back in the early 60s, there were no choices hardly at all. And Dr. Kelly's on the forefront of that. He was a pioneer, really, in determining your metabolism and what specific nutrients you need to rebuild and break down tumors and so forth and rebalance your body chemistry. So he was always way ahead of the medical industry, you know, way ahead. I think a lot of companies out there just kind of, they're looking for a magic bullet. They think there's just one or two elements you can take to reverse all these different problems. And we know that your health is a combination of many elements that you need at the cell level. Each individual is different. You know, the sort of biochemical individuality comes in. We all have our own fingerprint. We all have our own cell print. Each person is different. So you have to address the individuals more so. You really mm-hmm. do.
Mm-hmm. What is the lecture theater show that you have been working on for the past 20 years?
Sure can. Hopefully I'm going to finish this year. It's a kind of a new concept, really. It's a concept that's been utilized, but not specifically like I'm doing. I've taken my education with Dr. Keller the last 29 years, and being on the program myself, and then all the clients I've worked with the last 28 years, and put it into a format. It's like a seminar, similar, but I sing professionally on the side. Once I rebuilt my liver and got my health back, my voice came back. So I started singing in the late 80s. And so I've combined it with some songs, personal songs that I've written myself. I have one record out, it's a gospel tune I wrote for our governor of Kansas back in 91. And I play 12-string guitar, and I have some pop music and a widescreen slide presentation talking about my experience of overcoming liver cancer and diabetes and polycythemia. And Lyme's disease, I got in 90, pretty much. I mean, we all have that for life, but I keep it in check, pretty much. And special effects, and I entertain and educate each audience. It's a pretty new concept. It's named after my second book, Metabolic Mission. And, that's what I call it. My first book was Metabolic Metamorphosis. Reason being, not only did I regain all my health during the first 3 years on the program, 85, 86, 87. But in 1988 and 89, when I had my first clinic here in Wichita, Kansas, I was working with a homeopathic doctor. I reached my genetic potential. I was 34 in 89. Now I went from 5'9", 150 pounds, to 5'10", 200 pounds. I've been there ever since. In my lecture theater, I tell my story of not only overcoming liver cancer and diabetes and polycythemia, but I reached my genetic potential at age 34. You know, I went from 5'9", 150 to 5'10", 200. That's where I've been ever since. So medical science says that's pretty much impossible, but it's not. I mean, and it's not anything miraculous. It's just I had also broken my neck when I was 17. I fell off a high bar in gymnastics and had a hairline fracture to my C1. So that caused pituitary gland dysfunction. So I had a deficiency in human growth hormone. So once I rebuilt my body, my bones even grew. So, you know, just part of my lecture theater, of course, and telling my story, what happened to me. And in my lecture theater, I talked very specifically about Dr. Kelly's work and a couple of my clients over the years that I worked with that had extreme cases also. It shares the science and what happened to me and what happened to some of my clients. And I get into the specifics of the metabolic typing also.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of clients do you work with?
Oh, I work with cancer, AIDS, weight loss, allergies. I sponsored UFC fighter Graeme Maynard in Las Vegas in 2007. He was undefeated for the 2 years we sponsored him, too. So I work with about anybody. If they have degenerative problems, if they just want to regain their health and don't have any serious problems, we can do that. Or if they're very sick, we can address that, too.
And this is using the metabolic therapy, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Then can you tell us about your books and any products and the services you offer and how listeners can reach you?
Yes. I'm just finishing my third book, Carl. It's Metabolic Mission. It's kind of a sequel to my second book. Also, it just adds the last 12 years of my life, too. And you can purchase that as soon as we get it in print here in the next month from my website. My website is pretty simple. It's www.TheMetabolicInstitute.com. And the, or the, is spelled T-H-E, and metabolic is just like it sounds, M-E-T-A-B-O-L-I-C, and institute is like it sounds, .com. So it's TheMetabolicInstitute.com. And that gives an overview of Dr. Kelly's work and some of my case histories and some of my clients' testimonies, and gets down to the science of metabolic typing. And Dr. Kelly's formulations are all made by him. His son runs College Health Stores now down in Texas, and all our supplements are ordered via that company, and they address the individual's metabolic type.
Mm-hmm. And the first two books?
First one was Metabolic Metamorphosis because of all the changes I went through. Second one was Metabolic Mission. I published in 2000. And this third book is also Metabolic Mission. It's just adding the last 12 years and some case histories also for clients. Mm-hmm. Over the years.
And you have services, right?
Yes, my consulting service. So I work with clients all over the country and other countries. And I've been teaching a couple of doctors also overseas and here in the United States, metabolic science. And we're preparing to start teaching quite a few more.
Mm-hmm.
So working on that.
Mm-hmm. And do you have products?
Yes, all our metabolic supplements are designed by Dr. Kelly. Vitamins, minerals, pancreatic enzymes, granules, and so forth.
And those are all on your website?
Not on the website. Once I get a client, then I put a program together, and they're available via the College Health Stores.
Oh.
Yeah, and all my supplements I give at my cost to
mm-hmm.
my new clients.
Mm-hmm.
So it's at wholesale the first few months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people, when they're sick, if they do have cancer, by the time they get to someone like me, they spend a lot of money already, so I try to help them out.
Mm-hmm. Good.
You know.
Great. Would you give us the website again then?
Yes. www.the, depending on how you pronounce the or the, T-H-E, metabolic, M-E-T-A-B-O-L-I-C, Institute, it's just like it sounds, Institute, TheMetabolicInstitute.com.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I thank you very much. It's been interesting, and I've always been interested in Dr. Kelly and his work, so this will be mm-hmm. helpful to those having cancer and that are interested
mm-hmm.
in this type of therapy. So I thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. I invite you to my two websites, www.holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all of the previous shows for the last 5.5 years
archived under the blog. Using the search engine, you can find specific people or you can find specific topics of interest to you. You can also find my book, Healthy Holistic Aging, and also my latest book, You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions, for sale. You can sign up for my free monthly newsletter, and you can also sign up to have the shows mailed to you. I invite you to my second website, www.beatlungcancer.net, where you will find my latest book, You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions, which discusses my experience with lung cancer 39 years ago when I was given 6 months to live by traditional medicine and decided to use all natural interventions using a holistic approach. This approach was successful and I had no recurrence. Additional chapters in the book by Dr. Bernie Siegel, Dr. James Forsyth, Dr. Francisco Contreras, Dr. Kim Dossel, and Tanya Harder Pierce give additional ways to treat lung cancer using alternative, non-invasive, non-toxic interventions. You will also find the endorsements for the book and other information about it. And under the blog, you will find many of the radio and television shows that I have been interviewed on over the last year about this book. I also invite you to like my pages on Facebook. I have a page under Carl Helvey. I have a page under Holistic Health Show and a page under Beat Lung Cancer. I invite you to join me on LinkedIn under Carl Helvey. And I also invite you to join me on Twitter under Holist Health Show. I wish you a great week, and I look forward to seeing you next time. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host, wishing you a great day.